Very good, and we're coming into the second hour of the Barden Report, and the entire program today is given over to David Icke's incredible revelations in his new book. I'll name the book in a minute. Ken will give it to me. I've got to write it down here. But that first 47 minutes is very long, but very detailed, but sets the scene. This was well planned in advance by all the people involved. And just a note about David Icke. David Icke started life as a professional footballer. He was a very, very skilled guy. He then became a sports reporter for the BBC. And he started doing this tentative work in those days. And then on the Terry Wogan interview program talk show, he revealed what he was doing in research and that he saw shape-shifting amongst Edward Heath and other people. Some people have the ability to see this. And he said they were demonic beings. And the entire media, the BBC, wrote him off and he was fired. And he was in the wilderness for years. But he kept researching. He kept writing. He does these worldwide seminars now. But his seminars on information has incontrovertible proof. But we'll continue on with the next one, where we go piece by piece by all the outrageous lies told by 9/11. And the next one is 8.5 minutes, but we keep running through them. So we'll continue on with the next one, Ken. And okay, we'll go with that.
Can I ask you about the hijackers? Because we were all told that there were 19 Saudis, I think.
That's right. That did the hijacking. They were mostly Saudis.
Okay. Maybe mostly. Under the control, ultimately, of Osama bin Laden.
That's another thing, very quickly.
Yes.
Mostly Saudis. Sabbatean Frankist. Control of Israel, not Israelis. Control of Israel. Sabbatean Frankist, Donma, control of Saudi Arabia. No accident.
And most people don't even remember they were Saudis. They think they were Afghanis or Iraqis or whatever. But so you're saying it wasn't Saudis, it was Israelis? Who were the hijackers?
Well, that's an interesting point because there are so many anomalies about the hijacker story. If you take Mohammed Attar, he was called Mohammed Attar in America, but he was known as Mohammed El Amir, a student in Germany, an Egyptian student. And the descriptions of the personality of German El Amir and American Mohammed Attar couldn't be more different, including descriptions of their height, which seems to have several inches discrepancy. We are asked to believe, you see, that Mohammed Attar was the lead hijacker, and he was a virulent Muslim extremist, Islamic extremist, of the kind of basically what's become ISIS, extremist, jihadi. I quote in the book his girlfriend in America, a lady called Amanda Keller. And she describes how she lived with Attar in the run-up to 9/11, a place I think was called the Sandpiper Apartments, in a place called Venice in Florida. And she describes, and she's a white American, seriously un-Muslim. She's a girlfriend. And people at the apartments, which I quote in the book, confirmed that, yeah, they were together for a time. And she described how Mohammed Attar, Islamic extremist, was often drunk. His favorite food was pork chops. And he was a regular partaker of cocaine. And when he ran out of cocaine, because they followed him one night, the one he came from, he went over to the flying school he was in Venice, which was a drug operation, by the way, involving the CIA. What was a notorious conduit for drugs coming out of South America, etc. At that time, whether today, I don't know. And he went into the flying school with some people and came out with an armful of cocaine, and that's what happened all the time. This is the Islamic extremist that's supposed to have given his life to the benefit of Allah. We have another hijacker called Hani Hanjour, Annie Hanjour, according to the official story, was the man who flew Flight 77 into the Pentagon. So they claim. With a maneuver in a big 757 that, as I quote in the book, professional pilots that fly 757, 767 say they could not have done, including this extraordinary spiral that he's claimed. This man, Annie Hanjour, was banned 6 weeks before 9/11 from hiring a one-engine plane because he was so useless and dangerous at flying. Where are you, CNN? Where are you, New York Times? Where are you, BBC? Still today, Brian. Yeah, Annie Hanjour, he flew the plane into the Pentagon. It's what you get. He can fly a one-engine Cessna. And this, you know, I go through the hijackers, or many of them. And the idea that, I mean, look at the coincidences here. First of all, you are, in terms of Mohammed Attar, going to hijack Flight 11 out of Boston Logan on September 11, 2001. So where do you spend the night? Well, you spend the night in Boston, don't you? It's an early flight. No. He and another guy drove from Boston to Portland, Maine, and caught a commuter flight back, which was, if that commuter flight had been that morning of September the 11th, even vaguely delayed, he wouldn't have gotten Flight 11. And we're asked to believe that's what he did. But, you know, that's the story. And people think that there is security footage, security pictures of Mohammed Attar getting onto Flight 11. No. Guess where in a world, even then, awash with cameras, especially in airports, guess an international airport at that time that had no cameras in the departure lounges? Boston Logan. They say, but I saw a picture of Attar going through security. Yeah. His father says it wasn't him, but that the official story is it was. That was at Portland, Maine. And he left the hotel for a 6 o'clock commuter flight to connect with Flight 11 at 33 minutes to the hour. Or actually less than that, less than half an hour before the plane took off. The person who checked him in at Portland, Maine, said he was sweating profusely and said they're running late. What, for Flight 11? He then goes through security. Just as an aside, the guy who checked him in said they were wearing jackets and ties, while the two that went through security on the picture weren't. And that's the picture that went around the world, Attar. And people think that was him getting on Flight 11. It wasn't. It was getting on the commuter plane. Now, in the middle of the picture of the security camera, alleged, the last place you would put a time code is the middle of a picture on a security camera. It said 5:45 a.m. And most of the media cropped that picture, so that's the only time code. You'll see in the book, when you show the whole picture, there's another time code at the bottom, which is exactly where you'd put a time code on a security camera, and that says 6 minutes to six for a flight leaving at 6 o'clock.
Very good, very good. I think that's the end of that video piece. Okay, he's building up in these short video pieces now. The next one, I think, is about so-called drones, the lies about drones on 9/11. So if it's okay, we continue on that one. That's okay.
Who hijacked again. These planes? Or were they hijacked?
They were, I explain why I say that in the book. They were not the planes that left the airports. They were military enhanced planes that were flown by remote control. And have you heard of something called Operation Northwoods?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Right. Well, Operation Northwoods was basically, in so many ways, 9/11 in 1962. At the time, in 1962, the American military, Pentagon, and politically too, wanted rid of Castro in Cuba. So the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the military command level of the Pentagon, which was fundamentally also involved with 9/11, put this plan together called Operation Northwoods. Ladies and gentlemen, see if you recognize this. The plan was, it was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was a guy called Lemnitzer. And this is not me pulling it out the ether. I am quoting here the official record from the official American archive. It was most publicly revealed by a guy called James Bamford, a former investigative producer for ABC, in a book he wrote, which was published in the summer of 2001, before 9/11, called Body of Secrets, which was about the NSA. And in the writing of this, he uncovered these documents, which had come to light here and there before, but not as publicly as through this book. This was Operation Northwoods. This is official American documentation. The plan was, in 1962, during the Kennedy administration, just before he was assassinated, and Kennedy put a stop to it in the end when he found out about it, it seems. The plan was for the American military to set up terrorist attacks in major cities, New York, Miami, others, to sink American shipping. And this is the most relevant to 9/11. To have a plane flying from a commercial airport on the East Coast that would take it in its normal route across, at a high altitude, obviously, Cuban airspace. This plane, Operation Northwoods documents say, would be full of, this is the quote, carefully selected passengers with carefully selected aliases. The plane would take off, and over Florida, a military CIA plane of the same type, painted in the same airline colors, a drone, 1962, would take off from Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, would get close to the original plane, so basically the dots started to merge, and the drone would be flown on the route over Cuban airspace, and the with the passengers, that plane that took off from the airport in an absolutely scheduled flight would be landed at Eglin Air Force Base and the passengers removed. Note how few passengers there were on those planes on September the 11th for what would have got to business time in the West Coast.
But people did die on those flights.
They probably died, but not necessarily by the planes hitting the building. That's another story I go into in the book. It's a lot of a background necessary for that. But the point being, that these documents said that this drone, without a pilot, would be flown in the colors of the airline and the scheduled flight. When it got over Cuban airspace, they would explode the plane by radio signal. And it even says in the document, and we won't report it, we will wait for the international aviation authorities to tell us that it's happened so that there's more credibility that we didn't know about it. And the idea was, problem, reaction, solution, was to blame it on a ground-to-air missile or a plane from Cuba and justify an invasion of Cuba as a result of that. All these years later, in 2001, basically Operation Northwoods, much expanded, played out in America and justified what? The invasion of country after country in the same way they wanted to use that as an excuse to invade Cuba.
Sorry, I muted myself. Yeah, that's the next one is the false phone calls. But we'll probably go to a break now. Is this the best thing? And then take it on after that. And there's three very good videos to bring us to the top of the hour there at 8 minutes, 12 and 6 minutes. We're piecing this together. Okay.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't owned your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank-you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Okay, very good. And we're coming into the next video where David Icke describes the hard evidence of the false phone calls that are supposedly made from the stricken aircrafts. on 9/11. Now we go to that one now.
The people in the planes that died, how did they die? Were they in the plane? The phone calls from the planes. You know, there were people that did, you know, civilians that passed away in this tragedy, right? They were in the planes or not.
Well, it's a question of where they passed away. You see...
Are you saying those planes were subbed out and they were killed?
Just remember Operation Northwoods. They were going to land the planes at an airfield. I'm not sure they would want people on those planes to survive and tell the story. And, you know, there were war games going on, right? And in war games, they have actors playing parts in the war games. When I mentioned earlier about the National Reconnaissance Office and the scenario of a plane hitting that building in the war game scenario in Washington, they had smoke bombs. People at the reconnaissance office had scripts to keep to. People at the reconnaissance office were given phone calls to make it seem like it was a real scenario. There is a very good chance, I'm not saying this is what happened, but there's a very good chance that these war games and those planes were in some way connected. But those planes were landed. And other planes took over. And because of the sim over live, very easy to lose the plane, especially when the transponders are turned off, which gives the a detail of where the plane is and all that height, everything. But in terms of that whole scenario with the phone calls, I go into that.
And Flight 93 was the fourth one that crashed
the fourth
in the field,
one, yeah,
right?
In Pennsylvania. But first of all, at least some of those phone calls couldn't have happened. And if some of them didn't happen, the question is, did any of them happen? And when I say didn't happen, maybe we're not the people involved, or maybe there's some other explanation. Let me explain what I mean. Barbara Olson was a CNN contributor in Vision, and she was the wife of Ted Olson, the Bush administration solicitor general, who was in the Justice Department that morning. And the official story is that Barbara Olson called her husband at the Justice Department twice, and they had a conversation. Well, no one's ever produced the records of those calls, and the evidence is that they don't have it because it didn't take place. The story that Olson tells kept changing from she rang on an airphone, which were in the back seats and used to pick them. I used one once around the same time, funnily enough. And you could call from the air through these airphones. And the other thing was cell phones. So Olson's gone between, she called on an airphone, she called on a cell phone, right? Two things. At the height she was, according to the flight data recorder that was released to pilots for 9/11 truth by the authorities, she could never possibly have made a cell phone call from the height that that plane was at. So, must have been an airphone. According to American Airlines, that's what Flight 77 was, the airphones were taken out or dismantled by the time of 9/11 on 757s of American Airlines. That's in their own manual saying that. I've quoted from their manuals. Pilots and cabin staff have said the same. Oh, no, there were no airphones on 757s at that time on American Airlines. We're on United Airlines, not on American Airlines. Then you have a story of a passenger on Flight 93 calling his wife, a man called Tom Burnett. And his wife said that when the call came, his cell phone came up, right? So he's calling on a cell phone. And they had a conversation. And one of the things, as I explain in the book, that is a constant theme of these phone calls is people at the other end saying it was just incredible how calm they were. And I never heard any panic, any shouting. Often I didn't really hear a plane. It was silent at the other end. Anyway, the FBI was saying that these cell phone calls were made from these planes, right? And then someone, didn't take a lot of nous, mainstream media didn't mention it, mind. They pointed out you can't, certainly couldn't then, make cell phone calls from the altitudes they were talking about. Absolutely impossible. So suddenly the FBI story started to change and they became airphones instead of cell phones. And Burnett's call to his wife, when his cell phone comes up, suddenly became an airphone. It wasn't. And another guy called, and by the way, at the time those calls were made by Burnett, according to the flight data recorder, Flight 93 was flying at between 34,000 and 40,000 feet.
That high?
Yeah. So explain.
I thought it was getting close to the field and they made the calls when it was at low altitude.
Yeah. No. That's where, if you take the pilots for 9/11 Truth have done this and shown that at the point those calls were made, if you take the time they were made against the flight data recorder, that's the kind of heights that this plane was flying at. So it's impossible for him to make a call. Another guy, Todd Beamer, the man of Let's Roll, the whole Let's Roll story, which, as I show in the book, almost certainly wasn't said.
What's the Let's Roll story?
You know, when on Flight 93, the official story is that the passengers decided that some of the passengers said they were going to fight the hijackers for control of the plane. And this guy, Todd Beamer, what's claimed to be Todd Beamer, was on the phone to a Verizon airphone supervisor called Lisa Jefferson for a very long time. And she said it was absolutely amazing because that day, airphone calls were going down every few seconds or every few minutes. And yet his stayed on. And not only that, after the plane supposed to have crashed, the line remained open to Lisa Jefferson, she says this herself, for some considerable time after the plane was supposed to have crashed, because she said when the line's broken, you get a very clear tone that says the line's broken. Never broke. And the airphones get their power from the aircraft, which they wouldn't have done if the plane had crashed. But anyway, the cell phone of Todd Beamer made 19 calls after Flight 93 crashed, well, we're told it did.
Wow. Very good. Miracles can happen, you see, when you're in the CIA. Very good, very good. And the next one we go on to is, that's pretty conclusive proof of the lies, that 9/11 was allowed. Next piece is 12 and a half minutes. And well, all the data, all the information giving now proves it was allowed and planned. But 9/11 was specifically allowed and planned. Here's the next one, okay? Okay. Well, we'll go to a break first, and then we come back to this item, okay?
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible?
Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, this is very important information. What's to be said about CBD? AncientLifeOil.com. Our CBD is made from hemp and has 0.003 THC, which means this wonderful product won't get you high, no matter what amount you take. What does CBD do for the body? My hands are tied, but you can Google CBD benefits and be astounded. When you're finished reading, you'll want to log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com and purchase. Life is good when you feel good. People are tired of pain. People are asking for non-GMO organic products to help them with, you fill in the blank. Legal in 49 states, and again, our CBD is made from hemp. Ancient Life Oil is about helping people, one by one by one. If you wonder how good the product is, the CEO takes it every day without miss. AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Have a great day.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Okay, and we're coming back in quickly to the bottom of the second hour, and we continue on with this riveting series with David Icke and Brian Rose, where they're going through piece by piece. And the next one, I think, is called 12 and a half minutes. 9/11 was allowed. Well, the evidence so far proves that comprehensively. But we continue on with the next one, okay?
Buildings like the White House, the Capitol Hill building, and the Pentagon, they're no-fly zones. Why wouldn't they be? How can you protect buildings like that if planes can just fly in there without being challenged and then do what is claimed to have happened to the Pentagon? So it's called P-56. And what happens is when you enter that no-fly zone, especially you get into the inner cores of it, if you're not broadcasting the codes that allow you into that space, then you will be shot down. And I quote in the book a former defense secretary in America, Caspar Weinberger, who said that there are a ring of air bases around Washington, and if anyone threatens Washington from the air without broadcasting the code, then they're shot down. Another thing, I'll come to that a bit more in a second because it's very relevant. Another thing is that there's ground-to-air missiles protecting that no-fly zone as well. You mean there's not ground-to-air missiles protecting the Pentagon? I was approached by a guy in Australia just after 9/11 who was explaining how he has a role in the computer defense system of Australia. And he actually took me to the Canberra Parliament building and said, around here are ground-to-air missiles. You never see them. But anyone comes into this protected airspace and threatens to attack the Parliament building, they'll get shot out of the sky. No warning. If they've not punched in the code that allows them in there, gone. That doesn't happen in America. It's been shown that it has. And people that I quote have said, yeah, the ground-to-air missiles.
So it's suspicious that a plane could get anywhere near
it. It shouldn't get anywhere near it. Now, the organization that is designated to protect America and Canada from the air is called NORAD. And its headquarters is at the Peterson base in Colorado, and not far down the road, about half an hour, 45 minutes in a car, is Cheyenne Mountain, which is its operational base. Cheyenne Mountain, even in 2001, was the state of the state of the state of the art of tracking and reaction to things like this. And they have centers, NORAD, all over to react to situations in that area. The one relevant to 9/11 is called NEADS. It's at a place called Rome in New York State. And it is the one that reacts to these things like hijackings and gets military planes in the air to go up there and see what's going on and also to try to force the plane down. And if it's threatening a civilian area, to shoot it down. In the year before 9/11, 125 times this happened. Because what I quote in the book are the Federal Aviation Administration regulations for air traffic controllers, civilian air traffic controllers, in reacting to problems with a plane. And it says very, very clearly in the regulations, if you lose contact with a plane or if something is happening that you think is strange, always treat it as an emergency. In other words, you contact NORAD, NORAD gets military planes in the air. So what happened on 9/11 is that this system was suspended for some reason. And in a period of some 2 hours while this was playing out, not one single military plane was scrambled that made any difference to events. First of all, for the first week after 9/11, the official story was that no planes were scrambled at all in that period, which is completely unprecedented. And then after a week, the story changed and suddenly, yeah, oh yes, we did, because I mean, not scrambling them at all. It's like, what? Oh yeah, we did. Because the story's constantly changing when they get caught out in the first one. And they said that they scrambled planes for the New York attack from Cape Cod, 153 miles away from New York. There's no one closer. And they said that for the Pentagon attack, they scrambled from the Langley base in Virginia, 130 miles away. And neither of them got there anywhere near close enough to make a difference because of the time they were scrambled. In fact, we are told to believe, according to the official story, that the Langley planes, instead of heading for the Pentagon, this is after the World Trade Center has already been hit twice, they went out to sea thinking they were being scrambled for an attack coming in from Russia or somewhere, which they were used to during the Cold War. So they went out to sea before coming back, and they didn't get there in time. And there is a constant theme of 9/11 of personnel like Cheney, like Rumsfeld, like Richard Myers, the acting head of the military that day, and others Ralph Eberhardt, the head of NORAD, not being in a position to respond until the Pentagon was hit or said to be hit. This was a constant theme. They had cover stories, lies. I prove it, they're lies in the book, of where they were up to that point, where they weren't.
So they wanted it to be hit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because you'll get a bigger reaction.
The plan was, it's like a guy called Fletcher Prouty, who was a major person of experience within the intelligence community. He wrote books exposing the Kennedy assassination and all that stuff. And he said, if you're looking at an assassination, the same with 9/11, look at who had the power to call off the usual security response, because that's where it's going to lead you to what's behind it. So we've seen all these things that didn't happen that day that should have happened. Now,
who's the most person in charge that day? Cheney?
Cheney was officially, because look what they did with boy George Bush. They got him down to Florida and then flew him around air bases until 7 o'clock in the evening. They wanted him out of the way.
So he was completely not even in D.C. until 7 o'clock.
No, he wasn't. That was purposely done, because then Cheney could run the show without any interruption. I have a lot to say about Cheney in the book. But the thing is, 130 miles away from the Pentagon. So there's a no-fly zone over Washington. You police it from 130 miles away? What? 10 miles down the road from the Pentagon and the White House is the Andrews Air Force Base. The Andrews Air Force Base is where Air Force One comes in and foreign leaders come in and then get helicoptered to the White House. They do not have planes on standby to react 10 miles down the road to the no-fly zone over Washington. After the Pentagon was hit, as was widely reported, planes were scrambled from the Andrews Air Force Base to protect other attacks of Washington. Why weren't they before? Because it was had to be allowed to happen. Now, here's another kicker. I quote in the book tapes of NORAD tapes of the people that were there in the needs base in Rome, New York State, to respond to what was happening, right? And there was total confusion. You can see it on the tapes. This is why. What are the chances, Brian, on that day of all days, that what was described as an unprecedented number of war games were going on in the skies where the 9/11 planes were hijacked, playing out practice scenarios? There was a long list of them. I list them in the book. Of planes being hijacked, including one scenario, which was a plane hitting the National Reconnaissance Office in Washington, D.C. And what happens when these war games are going on is those that are tracking the planes have something they call sim over live. These are simulated planes as part of the war game scenario that appear on the screens of those tracking planes that really exist. And there's in one of the NORAD tapes, someone shouts out, "Get rid of the goddamn sim." Because they were totally confused. And when the reports came in to NORAD, they're all on the tapes, the official tapes, and I quote, of the 9/11 hijacks, the response team at NORAD Needs was saying, is this real or is this a scenario, basically? And they were, some of them have said, well, when it first happened, we thought it was, someone actually says, well, they started the war games early, basically, words to that effect. And it confused everything. And therefore, at one point, while the hijackings were going on, they had a long list of planes they thought were hijacked, weren't hijacked at all. So that created constant total confusion. The man who decided that that unprecedented number of war games would go on at that day, at least the person who made the decision, was Ralph Eberhardt, the commander of NORAD, who, 12 hours before the 9/11 attacks, put the Pentagon defense computer systems on the lowest level of protection. And the man in overall political charge of the war games, Dick Cheney.
Wow. A thriller novel that you could nobody could possibly write. Very good. 4:47 hour, whatever. Yeah, the last one in this series, we've three more to go after this in the next hour, is I've forgotten the title of it here, Ken. What's that? It's 8 minutes, 33 seconds. It's, Building 7. I'm having the wrong thing here. What really happened to Building 7? We go to that one now, okay?
Most people, well, whether it's still most people, I don't know, but one heck of a lot of people have no idea that three buildings fell on 9/11. There was the two World Trade Center towers. There was Building 7. Building 7 was owned by Larry Silverstein before he bought the lease, weeks before 9/11, and increased dramatically the insurance in the case of a terrorist attack. Got the lease on the World Trade Center towers, which we can get into later, because Larry Silverstein absolutely needs to be in public view. So Building 7 was a 47-story steel frame building. And it fell at 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11, having not been hit by a plane. And if you look at it, you can go on the internet, put in YouTube Building 7 collapse, you will see the most obvious controlled demolition you will ever see. The first 2.5 seconds of that building falling were in free fall speed, because what was below, as the top fell, had already gone, because it was a controlled demolition. You see, every now and again, you see on the news, you see stadiums blown up and big towers come down, and they fall. They don't fall over where they can hit other buildings. They fall on their own footprint. It's exactly what Building 7 did. What the official story says, he takes a breath because even I can't believe it. And this is the official government explanation of why Building 7 fell, was because of office furnishings fires, which would never even get close to the heat necessary to destabilize a building. And Building 7 coming down through fire, not even from a plane hit, but from office furnishings, official story, makes it before and since, in the whole of architectural engineering history, the first steel frame building to fall and collapse because of fire. And as synchronicity would have it, this very week, the University of Alaska Fairbanks has produced a report after a four-year study into asking the question, could Building 7 have fallen because of fire? I cover the interim report in the book. This week, they produced their final report. And they've said, these are academics and engineers and building people, no way could Building 7 have fallen through fire.
Okay. Sorry. Well, we're going to a break now. Okay, we'll go to this break then. Okay.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Republic Broadcasting Network depends on listener support of our advertisers and of our sponsors. We'd like to especially thank all of you who have taken advantage of our fundraiser with FrontSight Bonus. Those who are now FrontSight members, please train as soon as possible for your sake and for that of our nation. And please consider sharing your training and what you've learned when you arrive home. Republic Broadcasting Network has to stop promoting this fundraiser on air and on the website in just a few days. Dr. Ignatius Piazza, president of FrontSight, made a gracious exception to his no-media rule for us at Republic Broadcasting Network. Thank you, Dr. Piazza. And once you've been to FrontSight, feel free to call your favorite host and share your experience on the air. We can continue this fundraiser without media help, but it'll be totally up to the listeners to spread the information. Please call Dan Sutterfield in Missouri at 573-465-2356, 573-465-2356. That's 573-465-2356.
Okay, and we're coming straight back in to the last section of this second hour, and we are continuing on with the last piece of this particular video on 9/11 about Building 7, and we go back to that now.
So Building 7 is a massive symbol of the lie that is 9/11, because it could not have fallen. And I quote in the book so many different building experts, engineers, architects, saying it's a controlled demolition, Building 7. And there's even, of course, people won't realize, most people won't realize, there are groups of experts in their field, like architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, pilots for 9/11 Truth, firefighters for 9/11 Truth, a great stream of them that have been created since 9/11 to challenge different aspects of the official story, which makes no sense. And so we have a situation where Building 7 was a controlled demolition quite demonstrably. And you know who told us it was? Larry Silverstein, the owner. He made a big mistake. He was caught with his pants down here. He was interviewed on a PBS, Public Service Broadcasting, documentary about 9/11, not long afterwards, or some time afterwards. And he was describing what happened that afternoon in regard to Building 7. He said, what happened, and I quote him word for word in the book, and you can see it on the internet, you see the clip. He said, what happened was the fire commander came to me and said that Building 7 was unstable. And Silverstein, who made a fortune out of the insurance payout, said, well, you know, there's been such a loss of life that let's just pull it. Means controlled demolition, the building. And he said, and then we sat there later in the afternoon and we watched the building come down. One, that fire commander has never come forward and said, yes, we had that conversation. Never happened. And secondly, there's this little matter. First of all, fire officers do not control, demolish buildings. Experts do. And secondly, it takes weeks to put the charges in the right places within a building the size of Building 7 for the building to be made to fall on its own footprint in a controlled demolition, which is exactly what Building 7 did. So, first of all, building experts say it's a controlled demolition. And secondly, Silverstein said it is, and describes a story of how it came down, which is absolutely impossible.
Very good. Very well. That includes that. Lies, lies, lies. Okay, we're probably coming up to the last break now, the top of the hour, and then we have four more videos to, which will take up 30 minutes or so of the third hour to finish out the story of 9/11. Okay.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.